Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm the producer, Caleb Keith, and I'm joined by our hosts, Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, and Adam Francisco. Follow these great minds as they answer pressing questions about theology, history, and apologetics. This show is brought to you by 1517 The Legacy Project, serving to proclaim the gospel to all people, especially those broken by the church. Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. Today we have a special guest with us. Pastor Craig D'Onofrio is here to talk about missions. Really cool topic here. He's a missionary for the LCMS, so we're going to dive into that soon. But before we get there, just some quick announcements. Before our last show, we talked about the push for donations. That was a success during May and June, so we're excited about that. Thank you to everybody who donated. For continuing donations to support the podcast for the rest of the year, we have a new donations page on the Thinking Fellows website. Really cool. We used to have to direct you right to the 1517 website, but now when you're listening to the show or looking at the show notes on the Thinking Fellows website, there's a new donate tab. You can go there, and the donations still run through 1517, the Legacy Project. We are a project of 1517, so you'll get an email through them. But it goes directly to our fund, which is a great new setup, and you don't have to jump around to a bunch of different places. You can get everything from one location now, which is really cool. Besides that, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, rate us on iTunes, and you can also download the show on your favorite podcasting app. We're on a bunch of different apps, including Stitcher now. So check us out there. Dr. Keith, you want to roll us into the show?
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means, but I'll roll us into the show. Sounds exciting, though. Hey, I was wondering, Craig, can you give us a quick introduce yourself just a little bit? I mean, you've done so many different things in the broadcasting world. You've been a podcast host yourself for many years. Give us a little background on Craig D'Onofrio and why you're on this show on missiology.
Yeah, well, gosh, I mean, I could talk forever about my history doing this sort of thing. In 1993, when I went to seminary in St. Louis, I started working at KFUO Radio back in the day. And that was kind of my launch into broadcasting radio, talk radio, that sort of thing. I've got a long history as a recording engineer going back to the early 80s and all of that. But for the last 23 years, I've been working in radio and podcasting one way or another, either terrestrial radio or podcasting. And my most recent call was to be the program director for KFUO Radio in St. Louis, the LCMS's station. And also, I was the assistant director of broadcast services for the Synod. And while I was there, international missions came knocking. And they were aggressive in their recruiting, and I'm a pastor who discovered that working out of a cubicle didn't look like a great future for me. So I'm a little too free range for that. So now I am called to be the communications director for the Eurasia region of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, where I'll put all of this to work.
Great. And you're right now in California, and you're sort of on a fundraising stint for that project, right?
The Great Mooching Tour, I call it.
The Great Mooching Tour. Well, we're on the constant mooching tour, so you're among friends here.
How's that going? Is it tough to raise funds for missions?
Yeah, it's going a little slower than we anticipated, but we're making forward progress, and people are great. You know, those little $25 a month, $15 a month pledges and donations are the ones that will keep us in the field for the duration, for the next 5 to 20 years.
So, and also tell us the names of your two podcasts.
I currently do The God Whisperers, which I've been doing for, gosh, I don't know, 8 or 9 years now. Whenever Pirate Christian Radio started, Chris Roseborough and I started that together. And Bill Swirla and I decided to do a podcast, and it seemed like a lot of fun. So we've been doing that since then. And then for about 6 months or so, I've been doing 200 Proof Gospel with Pastor Mark Sell out of St. Louis.
Okay, great. Yeah. Then we'll give you, for the listeners, we'll have Pastor D'Onofrio come on at the break and maybe tell us a little bit more about what he's doing and his missions and raising money and how our listeners can help support you there.
Yeah, we'll get links in the show notes so people can go and donate to the cause.
So just to catch everybody up, Thinking Fellows podcast, we've been kind of in an erratic schedule because we've had some guests lately. We did a special on the Augsburg Confession, and we'll actually have some special guests coming on again to do a couple special episodes in the future here. But we're really wrapping up our walk through the Loci Communis, the common topics of theology. The last episode we did was eschatology, which are the last things, the final things. And I said as we began that show that we would do a couple of episodes on more ancillary doctrines or doctrines that are not quite as central to the Loci themselves, but are still, especially in later editions of the Locis, are definitely part of the discussion. And today we're doing an episode on missiology. And we actually, as Dr. Francisco and I were discussing the show ahead of time as we were smoking our pipes out back the other night, he said he'd really like to take the lead on this one. So I'm going to pass this over to you, Adam. You're a go.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things we could talk about here, obviously. I wanted to actually start off with kind of a pretty pointed question. There's this idea out there. It's not, I don't know that it's written, probably is written on Facebook or something, but you get, there's an attitude, I think might be the appropriate way of putting it, that people, that confessional Lutherans, and those who subscribe to the Book of Concord, whose thinking about theology is shaped by the confessions, it's often alleged that they're not interested or don't put much effort in advancing the gospel amidst non-Christians.
Does this have to do with the idea of the LCMS as the frozen chosen?
I don't...
I believe that, but I've heard it.
My question is, is the background only pastors can do this?
Well, I have that question in my notes here. Because I got the same question. Sometimes you see the distinction between the confessional and the missional crowd, right, yeah, and so on and so forth. But is it the case that Lutherans, confessional Lutherans,
right,
who are intent on preserving biblical doctrine as it's described in the Book of Concord for us, are they disinterested in missions?
It seems that until recent years that is the case. But nowadays, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the people who are overseeing missions, people like Pastor Dan McMiller and John Foley, I can't ever pronounce his name. Anyway, these guys are really dedicated to Lutheran Orthodoxy.
Good.
And I don't call myself a confessional Lutheran often because there's a subset of pastors in the LCMS that call themselves that, and they tend to devour each other with noogly nonsense a lot. Mm-hmm. But I call myself an Orthodox Lutheran, and there are a lot of us now, and the mission field is becoming more and more so. Dedicated to the Lutheran confessions, to the gospel, dedicated to a lot of things. There was a time in the LCMS where the idea of missions was we go into a country, we form a corporation so that we have an excuse for being there, and then we don't do anything. Mm. That's kind of it. We're here, and we don't do much. That's changed tremendously, and we are very active now. The region where I'm going, there are only about 19 career missionaries for, I don't know, well over a billion people, maybe near two. So we're really short-staffed in Eurasia. Latin America and Africa are really, really big regions, and they're doing a lot of work there. Africa, as most people know, especially Eastern Africa, has become very Christian and also very Lutheran. The church in Ethiopia, over 8 million members. They baptize at least 1,000 a week.
That's amazing.
Wow.
It's insane. And so they're evangelized. What they need and what we're providing for them is infrastructure, clean water, and that sort of thing. And also educators. We need professors to go and teach these people. I think, if I remember right, and this is probably wrong, but I think there's one pastor for every 10,000 parishioners in Ethiopia right now.
Wow.
Something like that. So they need pastors really badly.
Wow.
And they need educators too.
I mean, you see it all over Facebook all the time. I mean, that somebody that you know who's a pastor is, or a professor somewhere at one of the seminaries or one of the Concordias, is on their way to go do a stint of teaching at one of the seminaries right. in Africa. Jim Nestigan, my doctor father, he goes every year, once a month.
He's a great
guy. For a month to do a stint down there, too. So, yeah, I've heard that as well.
Yeah. And you know, these are people who are going to be evangelizing us in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, right. And they're probably already evangelizing Europe, right?
Well, they're... Yeah, actually, there's some great stories going on there. We'll hopefully get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know in... back in the day when I was at Wycliffe Hall, which is an Anglican mm-hmm. seminary, they talked about how evangelical Anglicans, not the wishy-washy Anglicans.
Stott.
Yeah, those who have been trained by Stott or Stott's students are actually coming into Europe mm-hmm. and even into the United States. I think Anglican mission in America is primarily an African-based Anglican mission to secular America.
Right.
So something like that might happen amidst Lutherans or in Lutheran circles.
I would not be surprised. Right now, the latest statistic that I saw is America is 23% nuns. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, 28% nuns was the last that I saw. And that
not ladies know. Walking around in habits, but people who...
Right. Yeah. Who have no religious affiliation. Yeah.
They check the box.
I don't
no know, religious.
I don't know if that's high or low or just about right. But the region where I'm going, it ranges between 50% and 85% in the Czech Republic where I'll be living. Hmm. So it's huge what we've got to do there.
And then it's Eurasia. So right. Does that include, I assume, the Middle East?
Yes. Our region goes from Greenland to the other end of Russia.
Lord have mercy.
Just a small little.
Yeah, 16 time zones out of the 24. So from east to west, everything but the Americas, basically. And then down to Yemen, which, as you know, is down past Iran and Iraq and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So the bottom tip of the Middle East there. And we don't have much going on down there right now. Most of us are attached to our heads, so we don't want to.
Could you talk? There's a lot of, at the seminary, the Lutheran Seminary in Fort Wayne, Concordia Theological Seminary.
Yeah,
there's
never heard of them.
there has been for some time, and even more so now, a focus, a particular theological focus on what's called missiology, the right. theology of missions. Could you talk to us about, maybe walk us through what that is? Because missiology isn't a term that you hear all that often.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of different ideas about what missiology is. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately we break it down to the Great Commission, where Christ tells us to go unto all nations, baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching everything that I've instructed you, and I will be with you always. So it kind of always goes back to law, gospel, word, sacrament, God's gifts for all people in Christ Jesus. There are a lot of theories about how to best do that, and I think that's where missiology gets a little confusing there's a lot of debate around it.
Is there a book in the field comparable to Bob Kolb's Theology of Evangelism?
I really don't know, Rod, to tell you the truth.
I haven't run into one.
Yeah. I'm not really a student of missiology that much, even though I'm a missionary, because my call is pretty specific toward media and church planting. So those are the two things that I'll be involved with.
Okay.
There is a book that was published 2 years ago, maybe three, by Detlev Schultz out of
right.
the Fort Wayne.
Good. Yes, yes.
And I don't remember the exact title. It's something maybe like Theology of Missions or something.
Okay.
And it's a sort of historical, has a historical approach on how Christians over the ages have approached mission.
Okay.
And then it's also, I think the second half you could describe it as being a theology of mission.
Okay. Well, if Schultz wrote it, then it's worth noting.
Yeah, he's an outstanding scholar, a great thinker.
Yep.
He has experience in the mission field. I think he was somewhere in southern Africa for a number of years.
Missions from the Cross, is that
it? That's it, yeah, Mission from the Cross.
That's
yeah.
the one. And we were given that book, we read it, and he lectured at our missionary orientation, a two-week orientation. He lectured for probably 20 hours or so.
Wow.
And he's fantastic, he really is. Mm-hmm. And it's great.
One of the things he mentioned, often mentioned, and a lot of the missiologists at the seminary talk about is the, not so much the replacing of Great Commission talk, but adding to or informing Great Commission talk with the term they used was Missio Dei, the mission of God, that the missionary work is not about the church going and doing things, but it's actually the church participating in what God does. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I know there's an old a German Lutheran author who kind of, I think, really is the first to introduce this term, Missio Dei, is George Wisdom. I don't know if you're familiar with that text, but
no.
He argued that missions or missiology, the theology of missions, has to be seen in light of the doctrine of the Trinity. The Father and the Son send the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is working through the ages, and the church participates in a way. The church, they're really not the ones who send. It's God who sends, but he uses the medium of the church to send.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's our doctrine of the ministry as Lutherans also. It runs the same way. One of the things that I find really, really encouraging is that, you know, for the last 100 years maybe, the idea amongst many mission groups was, let's send the white guy to convert the brown and black people, and he'll be their pastor until he dies, and then they're rudderless, or something like that. And what I really love about what's going on in missions now, especially amongst Lutherans, and the Finns are fantastic at this, by the way, but it's building seminaries. It's seeing the evangelism and raising up pastors and professors from the midst of the people so that they can be independent, so that they can do the work themselves, and so that they can take ownership of their church in every way possible. And then we go in with an exit strategy. You know, that's the thing, is when you walk in, you need to plan an exit strategy. Because the idea is you plant a church and they get going and you do the St. Paul thing and move on.
Back to the question about Lutherans or confessional Lutherans, right, with air quotations around it, not being interested in missions. There was a lot of talk amongst missiologists about historic Lutheranism, especially associated with, they usually pointed to Johann Gerhard, who once argued that the Great Commission, Matthew 28, was fulfilled by the apostles. And I've seen that opinion articulated by some still today. I think it's a small percentage, and it's usually those who consider themselves confessional.
Are these the ones that hold that the perpetual virginity of Mary is the most important thing in the Book of Concord?
Gosh. I don't read a thing about that stuff. But,
good Lord, deliver.
So you're... I find it fascinating that the guy who really brought this to light was a historian of missions. His name was Gustav Warnock, who in his work was, it was a German work, was something like Protestant Missions in the Reformation Era. And he pointed at the Anabaptists, the Calvinists, and every other Protestant group described their missionary work. And when he looked at the Lutherans, he basically said, this is making something, a long story very short, that the Lutherans really didn't do anything. And now I know that, I think he's mid-19th century. And I know once he published that, all these Lutheran missionaries and missiologists went to work and found that there's actually quite a long history of Lutheran involvement in missions, going back to certainly the 17th, even, I would argue, back to the 16th century with the Lutherans being stuck in the Ottoman Empire and so on. In amongst missionaries today, is there much talk about the Great Commission and whether it's been fulfilled by the apostles or not? And this is the perpetual Virginia Mary crowd talking on blogs?
I really have not heard anyone talk about if the Great Commission was fulfilled by the apostles.
This is wonderful to hear.
Yeah. This is the first that I've heard of it, really.
That's great to hear.
I think that as long as there are people who need Christ, the Great Commission stands. So that's kind of, as far as I know, what most of us believe and confess.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go to Dr. Rosenblatt's question that he asked earlier, because I want to ask, who can be a missionary? In light of our theology, our ecclesiology perhaps, is, you know, sometimes people say every Christian's a missionary.
That's interesting because, yeah, you hear both sides of that. I mean, I haven't necessarily heard as specific as the Great Commission has been fulfilled, but I have heard the idea that it has to be an ordained pastor that goes to be a missionary. Or
is that wisdom or doctrine?
You know, that's a good question. It often comes across as doctrine that I think is probably wisdom.
I think that the answer to this lies in what is your function in the mission field. We have people in our region and in many regions that teach English, and they use a Bible-based curriculum to teach English, and then they refer people to a local partner church. That's certainly mission work. And that's not something that is word and sacrament. That's not something where you need a pastor. If someone is called to go plant a church to do word and sacrament ministry, the confessions are pretty clear who should do that. That's clergy. Pastors should preach the word and administer the sacraments. So it really depends on what you're being called to do. A big part of my job doesn't require a pastor, mm-hmm. but a big part of my job does. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of in this in-between thing where, as a pastor, I can, as someone who's supposedly educated, I can have some sort of doctrinal oversight over content that's going out over the media. But also, I'm called to plant a church in Zurich. And what I'm going to be doing there requires a pastor.
That's tougher than Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, I know. I get to go to to Zwingli's hometown and
wait.
Yeah.
So you're going to be in Prague, right. Living in Prague, but you're going to plant a church in Switzerland?
We have off of the God Whispers podcast some guys who were listening in Zurich, and they liked what they were hearing, so they got a small catechism. And they started studying the small catechism. Then they got a Book of Concord, and they started studying the Book of Concord. And they contacted Bill and myself, and they said, "We're Lutherans.
Come be our pastor."
And their leader, Thomas, wants to be a pastor.
Ah.
Well, he wanted to be a pastor. Now he's afraid of being a pastor, which tells me he'd probably be a pretty good pastor.
Yes. yes.
So I told Pastor Jim Crick of our regional director about this, and I said, "I'd like to go down quarterly and work with these guys, catechesis, and get them communing and all the rest." He said, "No, you'll go at least once a month." So wow. I'm going to be commuting from Prague to Zurich once a month at least.
What's the travel time for that?
I don't know yet.
Wow. Yo. Okay.
Depends on if I take a plane or a train, I guess. One of the beautiful things about being in Prague is most of Europe is a short trip.
Yep.
And I'm sure Zurich, I doubt Zurich's more than an hour and a half by plane.
Okay.
So
I was in Strasbourg, and that same thing was true. You could get to anywhere, and it didn't take a long time.
Yeah. Mm. And you know, along with that also, travel's really cheap once you're there.
Yeah.
I can fly round trip to London or Rome for around $100. So it's very reasonable once you get there. So, so I'm going to be going down working with these guys, help get them communing, because they wrote us and they said, "Should we just start having communion or what?" hang on, you're getting a little bit ahead of yourselves. But Thomas down there, their leader, has baptized two babies and his best friend. They don't have a pastor, and so he's taken up the mantle, and God bless him.
Yep.
And when you don't have a pastor, you got to do what you got to do.
Yep, that's great.
Yeah.
Hope the whole synod sees it that way.
Luther saw it. And there's, to go back to the Turks, I apologize for talking so much about this. But he, in one work that he wrote right after the attack on Vienna, when he's anticipating a return of the Turks,
mm-hmm.
he writes what's called a muster sermon. And the second half of that sermon, he starts off by saying, "Now this part I direct to you Christians, you German Christians, who might someday find yourself living in the Mohammedan Empire." And he says, he doesn't put it this way exactly, but as he goes into it, he says, "You will not have access to evangelical books. Mm-hmm. You probably won't even have a pastor."
Yep.
So if you're there, if you're a slave of the Turk, or you're just living there, and there is no pastor around, consider yourself directly called by God to act as the pastor of whatever Christians might be there, And also, consider yourself called directly by God to speak the gospel to the Turk if the opportunity arises.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
That's pretty great.
Now, that's not, that's because it's extraordinary. It's,
I get it. I get it. But there are many people in our world, in Muslim lands, living under extraordinary circumstances.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And they should hear things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, this is a biblical model also, that in the early church, we were directed, raise up a pastor for yourselves.
Right.
And I, as far as I know, the Lutheran confessions have affirmed that as being neat, right, and salutary, or at least our Lutheran theologians. I don't know about the confessions.
Well, at least when the Anabaptists came and announced that they were called to City X and started preaching in the open yards, the Lutherans, and I think the Reformed said, that's not in order or not decently and in order, and started looking into what's a call to be a pastor at a given area. It was the Anabaptists who were pushing it.
Mm.
Yeah. I think confessions, I mean, that was the charge against the Lutherans, really, is that they weren't, by the Roman Catholics, too, that they weren't doing things in good order, they weren't following ecclesiastical succession and whatnot. I mean, power and primacy of the Pope basically starts out by defending their right to raise up pastors among themselves,
sure,
and mm-hmm. ordain them.
And they had to. They right. had to defend yeah. it.
Yeah. If you, I mean, I think it starts something with a line, something like, if you had been doing your job, yeah. you know, we wouldn't have had to ordain right. our own pastors.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. And so, go ahead.
Augsburg Confession 14, isn't that what's going on behind that, too? The, right. the whole yeah. Anabaptist, the sort of
yes.
chaotic, the direct yep. calling of the Spirit.
Yes.
Differentiation
yes.
between, yeah. you know, the Lutheran approach
yeah.
and
yeah.
actually doing things in order, calling pastors properly yeah. to particular mm-hmm. congregations, as opposed to what was going on with the Anabaptists.
It's very, very easy for our laity, when they hear the word Anabaptist, to think Baptist. It's better to think Pentecostal.
Right, mm-hmm. yes, correct.
That's more accurate.
Right.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, and I think it was Luther's letter to the Bohemians, where mm. they were having a lot of these issues. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the place where he said, look, emergency baptism, if you're on a ship going down, absolve each other, you know, mm-hmm. pronounce the grace of Christ to each other. But there's no such thing as an emergency Lord's Supper. Oh. And so he made those delineations, and I think that it was in his letter to the Bohemian Brethren.
Well, even if it's not, yeah, that's a good clarification, too, because I think it's pretty common in Luther to talk about absolution in terms of the mutual consolation of the brethren
right, yeah.
within the family, baptism and emergency situation. In fact, in the Small Catechism, right, it's got a short order for just that instance. But definitely there's a sense throughout the confessions that things ought to be done in order, and that the Lutheran churches throughout, from their beginning forward, had observed that, right, that they had called people according to a process, and that it was that person at that particular congregation who was called by God to proclaim the word and administer the sacraments, and that they weren't just having somebody pop up mm-hmm. randomly every Sunday to do that. Yeah. So good place to go into our break. Good news for you, Craig. TripAdvisor says only an hour and 20 minutes from Prague to Zurich. So we'll go from there into our break.
Welcome to our break. While we have our guest, Pastor Craig D'Onofrio, we're going to have him talk about one of the various projects he does online. He's going to talk about his Craig and Paula blog. It has very much to do with missions and the project he's going into right now.
Yeah. If you want to follow us and what's going on as we raise our funds, and then once we deploy, you can go to craigandpaula.org. It's a blogger blog.
Great.
It's really low budget.
Yeah, we're going to throw that into the show notes, too, so people will have a direct link there for people to go to it.
Nice. Very good.
We'll also put up the in the show notes the links to God Whispers and 200 Proof Gospel.
Yeah. So what do you guys do on the blog? What do you write about particular trips or?
Well, mostly we talk about the work that we're engaged in, but also where we're going, where we've been, churches and whatnot, as we present every week and preach. And I'll have the joy this week of being at the Synodical Convention. I don't plan on sticking my foot in session once, but I'll be manning the International Missions booth. So
good plan.
I'll be there with a flask of rum.
Good plan.
Come and see Craig at the convention.
Are you going to National Youth Gathering too?
No.
One time I was at one of my other synods gatherings, and an old pastor walked by, and he just quoted a chapter and verse from Acts and went on his way. And so I reached for my pocket testament. It was from the Paul and the Ephesian riots. And some were saying one thing and some were saying another, for the whole assembly was in confusion and most of them did not know why they had come together.
At least it wasn't an imprecatory psalm or anything like that.
That could be the banner at these conferences, and most of them did not know why they'd come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're...
I don't actually mean that, synodical people. I love the synod and everything about it. All right, Caleb.
Okay, so we'll have that in the show notes. Is there a particular blog on there that you like to introduce people to that you think is... Do you have like a summary?
Or yeah, anything? The Give Now button. That's the most important part of the blog.
There we go. Yeah.
So, he's supposed to say what, prayer first.
Besides,
yeah, really. Okay, first Craig needs serving. Prayer, then he needs money.
Besides the call to sort of be a pastor in Zurich, what is the call, as you described it earlier, media?
Right. I am called to be, well, I guess if I tell the story about how I got here, it would help. I'm working at KFUO, and my cubicle is right next to International Missions.
Okay.
So I'm always looking over the cubicle and throwing wads of paper at them or whatever. And Dan McMiller, who was at the time their chief recruiter, who's a great guy, he's former ELS. He came in. He was a missionary in Peru for 20 years and really interesting guy. But I'm sitting at the cafeteria one day just eating my lunch, and Dan comes down and sits next to me and says, Craig, what do you think about International Missions? And I, you know, my idea of missions is mud hut in Papua New Guinea. So I'm like, well, Dan, you know, when Tahiti opens up, let me know. I'll be happy to go suffer on the beach there with a beverage. So he kept sitting with me, kept talking to me about it. And he started talking about the Dominican Republic. He said, you can go to the Dominican Republic, great cigars, good rum, they have beaches. And so he's selling me on this. And I'm seeing myself less and less likely to be a career bureaucrat for the Synod. And he keeps talking, and I said, well, you know, tell me more about the Dominican Republic. And he started talking it up and talking it up. And I said, well, that's interesting. So, you know, my first inclination is get online and start looking at real estate to see how much that is. But he said, we really need someone in Eurasia. And what you do is so unique. We don't have anyone with your skills with radio and this sort of thing.
I see.
And so he introduced me to Jim Krakova, the regional director. Love the guy. Smokes like a chimney. He's an excellent guy. And we hit it off really well. And so they said, how do you feel about living in Prague? I said, well, I've never been to Prague. I don't know. So they kept talking, and I said, look, if you guys are really serious about this, I'm interested. If you're really, really serious about this, if you can almost guarantee, you know, I realize stuff happens, but if you can almost guarantee me a call, Paula and I will take money out of our savings and go visit Prague and see if we like it.
Hmm.
So we did that. We went over for a week, met the people that I'll be working with, amazing, wonderful people. And the city's just gorgeous, you know, because it's initially built around 850 and it's never been bombed out or anything like that. So it's just a beautiful place. And just love the people, love the place. And as things were going on, God seemed to be setting up the pins and knocking them down to clear the path for us. My wife didn't get her job renewed and all sorts of stuff. And so I sat down with them and I said, what is the job? And they said, communications director. I said, well, what does that mean?
Right, right.
And they said, we don't know.
you'll define it?
Basically, a big part of it is communicating back to Synod and, you know, the media here, whatever we have, what's going on in the region. But They want me to basically create media, Lutheran media, throughout the entire region, partnering with churches and church bodies and pastors and theologians and whoever, everything from podcast to terrestrial radio and television and so forth.
Now, are they fluent as most Europeans are in English?
In Prague, they are. You can function in Prague, but I'm learning Czech slowly. It's a very difficult language.
Oof-ta.
And only 10 million people speak it, so it's not a very useful language globally. Mm. But if I want to navigate the culture, it helps. And so we are learning Czech, but it's going to be a long road on that one.
Can you say, we need your money in Czech?
Not yet. Okay. I need to learn that one. Yeah. So my job, in essence, is I'm rolling my own for about 50% of the description. They're just depending on me to create things, and I've already started this. I've been working with Bishop Sabutis in Lithuania. He's now on 3 different radio stations. I got him set up with some recording equipment and everything, showed him how to use it. Lithuania. Latvia? Lithuania. I always get that confused. Most recently, I'm working with Pastor Hugo Givers in Leipzig. He has a whole bunch of refugees from Afghanistan and Iran in his church. And we are starting a podcast teaching the catechism in English, German, and Farsi, the language of Iran.
My goodness.
And hopefully soon we'll be branching out into Arabic also. So we're gonna have catechetical instruction in the Muslim languages. Mm. And maybe Adam can help.
Do you need Adam to do the catechetical instruction in Arabic for you?
Adam, we need to get you over to the area to work with some of the pastors over there, I think. I don't know if you've spent much time in Germany or anything, but there's a lot of cool stuff going on in Germany.
In fact, it's in Germany where I met Pastor Martins.
Yeah,
this is a long time ago. I stayed, my whole family stayed in the basement of their church for a couple days, and that's one of the churches, but also this church in Leipzig. You wrote a little article, and I think you talk about it when you go around fundraising, that a lot of this, I don't know if we can call it mission activity. I think we can.
Conversion.
Is happening amidst these Muslim refugees, right?
Right,
Could you talk about that a bit?
Amazing stories, and they sound too fantastic to be true sometimes, but they are, nonetheless. As you well know, Adam, it's becoming more and more common amongst these people that they have dreams where they see an angel or Jesus, and he says, go to this church and hear the truth, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And I was asking about this during the break. I was asking if Muhammad had received a good portion of the Quran by dream, and you said part of it at least. And my theory is that the Muslims will take dreams very serious compared to Americans who say no more pepperoni pizza before I go to bed.
Rum before going to bed.
Now, rum gives you wonderful dreams. But anyway.
Really? I might want to try that.
Palm
beer just makes me have to pee at 2 a.m.
A lot of palm trees. But anyway, these people are having dreams, are being told, go to this church and hear the truth. And the pastors are greeting everyone at the door, and everyone's gone, and there's someone kicking around the corner of the narthex or something like that. And the pastor will go over and say, can I help you? And the answer is, I had a dream. I was told to come here to find the truth.
Yeah.
And Pastor Martins in Berlin he's just a stallion with this stuff. He's single. He works 14, 16 hours a day. He's an amazing man. And he currently has 2 baptismal classes going on right now with 200 people in each class, all refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And this is happening. It's just crazy what's going on. And, of course, Rod, you had mentioned that as Lutherans, we kind of draw back and say, that sounds a little Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? And the only answer that I have is God's a divine fox. He can do whatever he wants with whatever nonsense we can dream up.
Mm-hmm. There's a great missiologist. He taught, I think, at Trinity in Deerfield, Paul Hebert, anthropologist as well. And he wrote a fairly famous essay in missiological circles. I think it's called The Law of the Excluded Middle. And the point, it's been years, but the point was that a lot of, especially American or Western Christians, unbeknownst to them, have kind of ruled out the spiritual. Mm-hmm. He's not making an apology or a defense for Pentecostalism or anything, but they've become, I think the term he uses, modernists, that all there is physical, material stuff, even though they would never call themselves as such. But
well, we have a long history in that. I mean, when Thomas Munzer said in an essay to Luther, "Bible, babble, booble, I don't need scripture, the Spirit speaks to me directly every day," we were off to a bad start. Luther answered back, "I wouldn't believe you, Munzer, if you swallowed the Holy Ghost feathers and all." And that was our beginnings with the Pentecostals of the 16th century. So any Lutheran is probably going to be nervous around Pentecostal moorings, and it's in our DNA. But I was delighted to find out that in our circles, the door wasn't absolutely shut. Some have, one professor at Fort Wayne long ago, but in general, the door is still open enough that God is permitted by us to perform the miraculous. Thank you very much.
So the name of that is, it's Paul, is it Heber?
Yeah, yeah. Hebert, the flaw.
The flaw of the excluded middle.
The law of the excluded middle is illogical.
That's mathematics. Yeah.
We'll put that up on the show notes.
He probably succeeded Paul Little at Trinity.
Okay.
I was his TA there, and I was in another synod, so Paul preached my ordination. I wasn't in Missouri.
Paul Little, the apologist?
Uh-huh. Ah, and I was his TA, and he came out to the Pacific Northwest to our beach place, and there was a keg of Heineken's and smoke all over in the beach cabin. And Paul came over to me, put his arm around me, said, "Rod, my fundamentalist friends wouldn't believe what's going on here." In other words, talking about winning the world for Christ in our generation, and with a combination like that of smoke and Heineken, after he was killed up in Toronto, he and his son in an auto accident, my mother happened to be in contact with his widow. And Mrs. Little said to my mom, "That was the happiest weekend my husband ever spent."
Wow.
And he said so.
Wow. Bunch of men in a room with smoke and a Heineken.
Yep. And talking about
it was.
And he was because he was always in the trenches, you just start him on jokes, and they were terrific ones because they were time-tested. He had us on the floor. I mean, and they just came one after the other after the other because they were time-tested on campus.
You know, going to all of this spiritual activity and how it makes us nervous as Lutherans and as American Christians and so forth, it's amazing how in the mission field, especially in third world countries, there's a lot of weird stuff that happens that's hard to explain. And a really interesting book on this is called "I Am Not Afraid" by Dr. Bob Bennett, who's a Missouri Synod pastor. I think he's with Lutheran Heritage Foundation, if I'm not mistaken. But this was his doctoral work. He went to Madagascar and spent a lot of time there and was involved with a lot of demon possession
dealing with a lot of demons.
Yeah, dealing with all of this. And anyway, he's written, I think, two books on this. I've only read this one, but it's interesting how this occurs a lot in third world countries. A friend of mine who's an Ethiopian pastor spent time in prison in Ethiopia for the gospel and so forth. He's telling me about a lot of demon possession in his experience. And the people are just, I think when you get into these uneducated situations, the people are really sensitive to demons and the spiritual, and they're very superstitious, and I think the superstition helps breed more of it, and I don't know what it is, but it's wild what's going on, and you can't discount it because we're Lutherans, and we don't really see this sort of thing.
when you're faced with it on the mission field, it's hard to do something from your dogmatics a priori and work from the top down.
Right.
You're working from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so glad that officially the Missouri Synod has the door cracked a little on, imagine if it were totally shut. Mm-hmm. That is, when the last book of the canon of the New Testament was finished, that was the end of anything miraculous till Jesus returns.
Right.
And that has not been historically our position. I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, we just don't look to that for sort of primary informative value.
Right.
Yeah, go to...
And but it could. We could have closed it. We're perfectly capable of that.
I think that the Lutheran understanding of mystery and paradox helps us a lot with this, though, because we realize that God is not on our schedule. I have Calvinist friends who are complete cessationists. God doesn't do that stuff anymore. That's it, because they have God more figured out than we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are not finally cessationists. There was a famous one at Fort Wayne. I think he's not there any longer. But he was not typical to close the door that tightly.
And we operate with an open canon, realizing that if we found tomorrow something...
Third Corinthian epistle.
Yeah, something autographed by Paul, and we could prove it.
Yep.
You know, we'd be open to adding it.
Yeah, it drives the Reformed crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah
just drives them nuts.
You've got that Bob Bennett's book up there.
It's on Amazon.
I'm Not Afraid. I was actually on his dissertation examination committee.
Oh, really?
And
yeah, what was your take on it?
I went in. Bob is a wonderful man and very confessional Lutheran.
Loves cigars.
Yeah, he loves cigars. When I received the dissertation...
Adam likes cigars a lot as long as they only cost $2 or less.
Go on.
Professor's salary. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Anyway. Go on.
And I remember thinking, as I got the dissertation, I wonder what he's going to do with this. Because I assumed, this is my fault. I assumed he probably was a modernist, if you will. I'm kind of a modernist myself. But as I think in the first or second chapter, he gets into Hebert's flaw of the excluded middle. He says, we've been kind of culturally informed to rule out any sort of spiritual activity. Mm-hmm. He says, if you go to a place like Madagascar, where he did most of his field research, I think all of his field research, you cannot...
Yeah.
Discounted. It's absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I think his big niche is demonology and exorcism and all these sorts of things. He's kind of reviving it in the Lutheran tradition.
Mm-hmm. I just read an article on a Christian psychologist who occasionally diagnoses the need for an exorcism. And
I saw that. I didn't read it, but I saw it.
It's kind of interesting because, I mean, at my time at Concordia in the student affairs division, I can't tell you the number of trouble students I myself encountered and worked with who, you know, they're on medication, they're going to counseling once or twice a week, and there's just what you see, the disconnect between reality and whatever they're thinking or experiencing is so great that you actually begin to make some headway in cracking down that wall of the flaw of the excluded middle, because really... It gets to the point where you really can't envision another answer to what's going on with this person. And I'm not saying that in every case, but I'm saying I think that at some point in time, you know, you look through the scriptures and the gospels, and today things that we would diagnose as schizophrenia, Jesus cast out demons for. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting that we do sort of have this cultural mindset that just stopped then. Mm-hmm. And we go, and I don't want to take it, I would never take it too far, but it's just, anecdotally, it's been sort of interesting over the last 4 years for me to observe these students as they come in with, by floods, and some of them are really helped by modern techniques, and just some of them can't be touched, even when they're being treated chemically, when they're being treated through talk therapy, and you think, my goodness, is there something else going on here?
Yeah, before your time, you guys, Exorcist 1.
Oh, yeah.
First one.
Those commercials scared me to death when I was little.
At the time, Dr. Montgomery did a trifold brochure, and the graphic on it was, in the darkness under a street lamp, a priest walking along with a small case. And the title of it was, To Help You to Understand the Movie You're About to See. And evangelicals passed them out to people in movie lines all over the U.S. Mm. To help you to understand the movie you're about to watch.
Wow.
Interesting. I think that this is part of the reason that we recoil from it naturally, from the supernatural in general, is because of what the Pentecostals and the charismatics do with it.
Sure.
Is, instead of this really foul demon that's making someone violent or something, It's the foul demon of poor eyesight, or the foul demon of a head cold, or the foul, you know, it's the foul demon of whatever's bugging you today.
Yes.
And I wouldn't want to see it everywhere. I guess I'm just, the only reason I even brought it up is I just trying to be honest and saying in my 4 years that I worked, working with, you know, 1,000 students at a time, it occurred to me several times. Sure. I mean, it's just, and I'm not, I don't incline towards that at all. I mean, if you know me, you know, I don't incline towards.
You're driven toward.
Yeah, at all. It's not my go-to in any way, shape, or form. And the number of times that I sat and talked with somebody and said, man, I think there's something, actually, you would usually be talking with the campus pastor. I think there's something going on here. I think that we need to, there needs to be some spiritual intervention in some way, not just psychological for serious reasons. Yeah. Anyway, how did we get on this?
Yeah,
well,
And well, I just in the mission, in the mission field, we were talking about you're going to run into it.
Yeah. But we have, we actually have 5 minutes, but that was about 10 minutes ago, right?
Yes.
Can we just wrap up? Can I ask you a question? One more question about what about for our listeners, for us here in America? People talk about America becoming a post-Christian nation, as if it ever was a Christian nation.
I've heard that before. Who says that?
A lot of people.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Are we, whether it be Scott, myself, our listeners, amidst our neighbors who believe everything and anything, except for the gospel oftentimes, are we, in a sense, missionaries?
Well, absolutely, in living out our vocation. Of course, you know, we have the work of the gospel to be about us. And it's not that we're necessarily called to stand on a street corner and thump people with a Bible or anything. But, you know, as Luther and Calvin both talked about, the wife who changes the diapers of the baby is serving Christ, the shoemaker, the bread baker, and so forth. So we serve Christ in our vocations, and when opportunity arises to share the gospel, we should. I found it really interesting over the weekend. I was up in Ventura, and I was at a new tiki bar, Ventiki, up there, which is my life. While I was sitting there, we started talking with this gal next to us, and she was curious about us, and I said, we're missionaries, and this is, and she was, you know, the disconnect, a guy drinking a Mai Tai who's a pastor, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so it opened up an hour-long conversation where Paul and I were just basically sharing the work that we're doing, and I gave her my card with all of my podcasts on the back and everything. I said, check out our podcast. And she said, well, I'm going to come to Prague and I'm going to see you. I said, please do. And, you know, so it's these simple interactions that anyone can have where you're not even necessarily sharing the gospel, but you're being open about being a Christian and building a relationship and hoping that not only did I just make a good friend, but maybe this is someone who might come to church. Mm. And, you know, the opportunity to just be open and inviting.
Great.
So that's mission work.
That's a great summary to sort of wrap up the show. Did you have?
Yeah, I just want to say I do want to encourage the listeners to check out the, Craig's podcast. Check out the craigandpaula.org. Is that what it was?
Craigandpaula.org. Yeah.
Yep. Craigandpaula.org, and give if you can. I mean, they're trying to get over to Prague. They're trying to get over to Europe and areas of Europe and Eurasia that are just highly. They need the gospel there.
Yeah, the Czech Republic's 85% nothing. Yeah. Nothing.
And if you can manage to send some support their way, I know we'd appreciate it here, and keep them in your prayers is always appreciated as well.
All right, thanks, Scott. Thank you for listening to the show.